This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
It's one thing to create the content, but do you think many businesses actually put a cost on creating the wrong content?
No, I don't think
so. Is that possible to do, do you think?
I mean, sometimes we run workshops with people where we map out what the workflow looks like and then map out how many people are involved and how much does it cost them to publish something. From the time when someone says, we need something about rainbows, to publishing a page about rainbows. And often it's like $4,000 or $5,000 and people's jaws just drop to the floor.
Hello and welcome to Bringing Design Closer, and this is HCD. Our goal is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organizations to become more human-centered in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. My name is Jerry Scullion. As you probably know, I'm the founder of This Is HCD. I'm an educator, service designer, and a podcaster here at This Is HCD. Now, in this episode, I speak with Henrik van Haren, co-founder of Content Design Academy at Content Design London, and now author of Content Transformation, a fantastic book that no doubt will find its way into the hands of the user experience and service design community, hopefully over the next couple of months. It's an awesome book. I've read it and we chat about that book exclusively on this podcast. And let me tell you a bit about the book. The book sets out to enable a content alpha to occur within businesses. How to go about this, including setting it up, how to sell it into the executives, and all the way through to measurement. Henrik is awesome, and I know you're going to really, really enjoy this one. So let's jump straight in. Henrik, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you, Jerry?
Doing so. It's a Friday afternoon ahead of a long weekend. So over here in Ireland, is it a long weekend in the UK?
No, it isn't.
It's something to admire about the Irish. They still have little ties to the church. It's something to do with a religious thing, I think. I don't know. But either way, I'm off on one day. I'm happy about that. But we were chatting there just beforehand. You are a partner, is that right, at Content Design London, or co-founder?
I am a co-founder of the Content Design Academy, which does sort of train part of the training for Content Design London, but we're all sort of one big and happy family over there.
Absolutely. I met you through the wonderful, the one and only Sarah Winters. We connected a number of years ago. We've done a bit of work over the years. But you've got a new book out called Content Transformation. Where did you come up with the idea for this, I wonder?
Well, the wonderful and unique Sarah Winters and I were chatting about 18 months ago. And we were chatting about content strategy and how content design is still a new discipline, but it's kind of matured sort of over the last 10 years. But content strategy is still kind of a new and woolly thing for many people. And the more we were chatting, the more I was thinking, well, no one kind of wakes up in the morning thinking, I need a content strategy most urgently. It's usually part of a bigger thing, and that's where we started to think about content transformation. And there's usually a reason why people want to change something, why they want a strategy. And so I then kind of package the strategy in a sort of bigger thing.
So talk me through the use case of this, because content transformation might be almost like an oxymoron for some people. They might kind of go, well, how would this work, like in terms of transformation of the business or transformation of the website, digital transformation? Where does this sit amongst all of that?
So there's books around digital transformation out there that talk around sort of the big tech background, etc., and the organizational change, etc. But what I found was, so for example, when people come on the Content Design London courses, there was a lack of understanding about how to run a bigger content design project. And there were a lot of people coming saying, our website isn't working. There's too much stuff on there. Years and years of legacy content. People can't find anything. They keep calling us up. That sort of thing kept the stories kept repeating themselves. And I thought, okay, there's something here where people need a bit of guidance.
Need help. Yeah, because that's it's a really common thing. Like I was speaking to a bank yesterday, and they were talking to us about the role of some of management in product spaces like that, where their job is just adding stuff to the system. It's not really about extraction or managing that process. Their job is effectively a task completer. They ensure that the thing gets added for the department. And I was like, God, that sounds like a horrendous example for people managing their content, because you're going to end up with this mud hut scenario where you're just throwing stuff and it's not really thinking about the whole kind of sequencing of things. So in that example that I'm just talking about there, like a bank where there's so many people looking for things and they're competing about space on the website, you know, the homepage. As I'm talking, I'm actually, you know, feeling somewhat queasy. I've been in those positions. Is this book set up for people like that, where it'll give them a sort of step-by-step process to how to enable that this type of transformation to occur?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So it's basically
great. Thanks for your podcast.
It'll solve all your problems. And I did it all on my own. I look at it like this is an atlas that people can open up and say, okay, I'm here, but I want to go to hit there. And how do I do that? And then there's workshops you can run, etc. And then what I want people to do is read it and then think, okay, yeah, this is good, Henrik, but actually what we are going to do is something different. I just want to spark some ideas in people's heads and help them to take action, really.
Nice.
Because I think content designers are often a bit afraid to speak up still in organizations, and this will maybe help them get sort of a clear idea of how the process can work.
So if you had to give a tagline, because I know Sarah's book, Content Design, which for me was the first piece that I'd bought and just resonated with me straight away. I was like, okay, well, this fills in some spaces for me in the user experience and the product design and the copywriting worlds. It kind of brought all of these disciplines, interaction and information architecture together. What would the tagline be on this one? And what's the connection between the two books? Or is there a connection between the two books?
So the connection is that Sarah's book explains what content design is and how you write content in a user-focused way. And this book is the process of changing your content to slim it down, first of all, and make it user-focused. And of course, that isn't just about content. When you start taking everything apart and then puzzle it back together via your user needs in a new way, everything else changes. Yeah. The design changes, the structure of the whole thing changes. So the title Content Transformation is maybe a little bit misleading in that it can't just be about the content.
There's almost different lenses that you can apply to this. Especially, I remember when I was speaking to Jerry McGovern about content, and his statement is you can get rid of 95% of the content on a website. Obviously not any pieces of content. There needs to be a process put around it, and it'll still function. It'll still run. Like, you know, like an awful lot of the long tail of the content that's been created historically by organizations tends to be not very good. So how does deleting of the existing content form part of your narrative in the book, the retrospective stuff?
I think that content is, as a digital discipline, is a bit of an exception in that everyone can put their fingers on a keyboard and start writing something. Not everyone can put their fingers on a keyboard and start coding or designing something. People might have opinions about design, but they usually can't do it. So that means that a lot of organizations, like you were saying about your bank example earlier, and a lot of organizations over the years, we've seen this mushrooming of unnecessary content because people just publish stuff because they can.
A frenzy. And
yes. Yeah. And this, the process I've kind of laid out in the book goes through researching what people actually want from you, what does your audience need, then from that identifying your user needs, and then puzzling something new back together, rather than saying we've got 2576 pages, which ones of these are we going to keep? That is usually a very work-intensive and boring and not very effective process.
Yeah, it's also probably quite demoralizing as well for teams, I imagine.
Yes, and it's the process I've just described is also a culture change, means culture change. People have to think about, starting to think about content in a different way, not as in I'm writing a Word document with 2,000 words and then I'm handing it over to the digital team and somehow like magic it will appear on the website. That kind of model that still exists in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Doesn't work anymore, and you're taking something away from people, so that's scary for them, from stakeholders. Yes. But you're giving them something else, which is, let's just think about why we're doing this, why we need this new piece that you're suggesting, what are people actually getting out of it, and what is the business getting out of it? Because the other side of this is that publishing content can be very expensive because lots of people are involved, and most businesses have no idea how much it costs to publish something. So this is also about streamlining the whole thing, teams working together more efficiently, being more happy, and saving money at the end of the day.
It's one thing to create the content, but do you think many businesses actually put a cost on creating the wrong content?
No, I don't think
so. Is that possible to do, do you think?
I mean, sometimes we run workshops with people where we map out what the workflow looks like and then map out how much, how many people are involved and how much does it cost them to publish something, from the time when someone says, we need something about rainbows, to publishing a page about rainbows. And often it's like $4,000-$5,000 and people's jaws just drop to the floor. So
you don't think like that. Expense.
No, they don't.
It's fascinating to see what lies beyond that. But what I really like about the book is you set it up in terms of an alpha. Okay. So like you set the premise up about trying to sell the the not sell the discipline, but sell the approach into how to start off, like, with some housekeeping rules, and then setting up the alpha. So in your experience, what are the resistance points within organizations to taking that first step? Do you have any experience in that yourself?
Often is that senior people don't really understand the digital space to start with, and you're selling them something that might be very abstract for them. To say, we are going to scale back the content and we are going to make it more user-friendly, etc., doesn't really resonate with them. So I find you have to find ways of tapping into their mental space. So more engagement, lower costs, making more money if that is part of their business model. So you need to know what the business goals, the bigger business goals are, and kind of tie that into your story, into your sales pitch.
It's a more of a modern way of thinking when you think about it, because, you know, we want to make sure that what gets created is the right thing, and we want to do it the right way as well. But some organizations, and this is an assumption on my behalf, I've got no research to back this up, but there's a certain amount of self-serving happening where they're like, oh, we've been so busy, we created whatever 100 pieces of content this month, and they feel some way vindicated that they've produced this amount of effort. Like, it shows the business that we've actually created something. We're creating things. That equates to like, oh, aren't we doing well? Is that fair to say, or am I way off the mark?
No, I think you're absolutely spot on. And that is a hurdle to overcome when you introduce content design principles and this way of working, because the biggest part of running an alpha or a transformation project is really to figure out what people need, not to write as many pieces in as little time as possible. So a lot of time is spent to figure out what people need and how to give it to them. And then the smallest bit of the work is to actually make the thing, at least for content. And that is difficult for senior people often to understand, and it makes them nervous because they don't see lots of stuff being churned out. So there's a lot of managing expectations that you have to do.
One of the big pieces there is it's a shifting of the mindset in terms of, rather than creating and reframing it more towards the outcomes that we're hoping to achieve by creating the output of our efforts, so to speak. Is it fair to say that in that sort of fable that I've just told you there, or that narrative, it's measuring the wrong thing? It's measuring the amount of work versus the outcome. So it's more of an outcome-driven measurement that we're looking to achieve. And if so, have you included any of the ways of measurement in terms of the effectiveness of the content?
Yes, there's a part in the book that talks about how do you actually know what you did is successful.
Yeah.
And that looks at sort of different content formats have different purposes. So you can't just sort of apply some blanket analytics to everything. And then to think about what do the users want out of this? Can we measure that succession rate in some way? So there's kind of different success criteria you need to apply. And you also, because that adds to this process being transparent, so that you don't, we've gone through this alpha now, we've published some stuff, it's just sitting there and we don't know whether it's doing well or not. So you need to create, also to sell this into the organization, you need to create transparency, sell it, saying, okay, we'll let it run for 6 months or 8 months, and then we go back to it and we iterate.
Yeah. And you work from that point. I mean, I think that's where a lot of designers probably fall down. Like, you know, when we're going to do research, we do an awful lot of the preparation, we do the screeners, we do the work. And then when it comes to the sense making, we kind of just say, okay, well, we've got enough what we need, we move ahead. But there's a piece there that we could also probably do a little bit better. And that's what I'm hearing from you, is the kind of like the shouting about it, or the talking about it, or the sharing, and the increasing the visibility of our efforts. Can you talk a little bit more around the metrics that you mentioned there about being able to measure it? Are there any things that you can talk about without giving away too much? Because I know we're on a podcast. You want people to be a little bit more interested and hopefully buy the book, because that's kind of the nature of why we've written the books, I guess. But what measurement tools do you have included in the book that people could learn about?
So it's broadly a mix of what is the content mm-hmm. trying to achieve. So let's say you are running a health website and you've published a bunch of new content pages around diabetes, type 2 diabetes, for example. So you will set some criteria around what these pages are trying to achieve. So, for example, we get a lot of phone calls about people struggling to understand how to take their medication. Are those phone calls, the number of those phone calls, is that going down, for example? So you're looking at, okay, the format, what is it trying to achieve? The content itself, what is it trying to achieve? Then user intent is an important thing to measure. What do your users want to get out of this? Are they engaging with further content? Are they going on onward journeys, for example? So we work with charities who want to build their community. So you can see an effect of people coming from content into the community pages, discussing topics there. But then there's also business goals. What does the business want to get out of this new content, whether it's sales or saving costs or more engagement? So that's another measurement that comes into this.
What I really like about the content design discipline is they've stood up and they've pointed at the thing that's not working. Okay. Typically what I've seen when I coach teams is they're somewhat subservient to the organizational control and command, where they're like, okay, we're going to work on this project, and they start working on it, and they're effectively doing the mud hut scenario that I'm talking about. They're contributing to the long-term design and content debt of the organization. Content design, on the other hand, has stood up and said, we're different to this. We want to look at, you know, the processes that go into how we create things. So it looks at sort of reducing the debt over time. Where do you see, after this book has gone out, and if you imagine it's a New York Times best-selling book, Henrik, okay, and organizations, it's only a matter of time, okay?
From your lips, you've got to. It is only a matter of time.
And Jerry said it, and then you won't believe it, 3 weeks later was a New York Times best-selling book. If it is, folks, you've heard it here first, okay? But imagine that it is like an organizations adopt this mindset. Where do you see the content design discipline going beyond this? Okay, because between yourself and Sarah, and then there's Rachel McConnell as well, who's been on the podcast as well, there's an awful lot of very solid books being created. What do we need to do more of amongst the zoomed out design disciplines about working better together?
I think there's still a lot of work to do in terms of cross-team working. I'm still experiencing myself and hearing a lot of stories from colleagues where a startup makes a service or a transaction, an app, and everything is built and designed. And then at the end, they bring someone in and they say to them, can you just sort of put some words on these screens in our app here? And that is, is annoying, not because I'm a content designer, because it usually doesn't work. Because then content designers look at it and they say, well, why is this here and not here? And there's no narrative through this and you're just jumping around. So basically, when you make a new product, to look like it's a given that you have developers and designers and a product manager on there, it should be a given that you have a content designer on there. Because we need to be involved in everything all the time. No one does, but to involve people strategically so that you can build a better product at the end of the day, I think is important. And the book, I hope, is going to give content designers out there a clear idea of how a project can be run so that they can join these teams and say, hey, hang on a second, why don't we try this? Or let's do a workshop about X. Because there's a bit in the book about we need to overcome our Cinderella complex, where we always sit in the corner and are waiting to be asked to the ball. And I want people to just stand up and walk over to people and say, I can help you with this thing. Oh, because I have all the subject matter knowledge, for example. So hopefully it's going to give them a bit of confidence to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you mention at the start that you've been working on a course around the content transformation piece as well?
So we're running sort of several courses already at CDL. There's a kind of foundation course of the introduction to content design. And now we've also got an advanced content design course, which covers parts of what's in the book. But our next endeavor is to go pro and do something for content design for pro, which I think there's a lot out there about thinking on your feet is something I've been thinking about a lot lately, because when you, like, you know, Jerry, when we're on these projects, things never go according to plan. So you have to be creative and flexible and sort of react to change very quickly.
Yeah. Speaking of change, one of the bits that I really enjoyed reading about, and that's not being anyway a sadist, but I enjoyed reading about the difficulties that Content Design London had in redesigning their website, which do you want to talk to us a little bit more around that? And I don't mean that in a negative way. It's like, I can imagine, you know, it's like anyone's website. Like, it's always, it's easier to work on other people's website than it is in your own. But talk to us about the process of presumably a team of content designers worked on it. And you had some great books to lean on as well to get the information, but yet it was still a struggle. Can you tell us a little bit more around that?
I wasn't involved in making the new website.
No one was involved in it. That's what I can understand. No one wants to put their hands up and say, I was involved in it. Sarah was the same. It wasn't me.
The CDL team, I mean, it's like writing your own CV, isn't it? Like, you suddenly, it's cringy talking about your own achievements and all that. But the team at CDL, they kind of followed this process. They had sort of their user needs developed and identified and pieced them together into pieces of content that would be needed, and to think about the journeys that people might go through. It's a relatively small site, but once you sort of start thinking about, well, what do we want to achieve as a business, and what do we know about our users, it gets sort of more tricky very quickly.
Absolutely. One of the things that I did notice was the speed on the website now is ridiculous, but there's very few images on the website, so it's mostly text. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Which also has to do with accessibility and also loading speed, because they've thought a lot about people who might not have very good Wi-Fi or not high speed connections, or look at this on their crappy old phone, etc. So that kind of thinking also came into this.
Well, look, Henrik, I'll put a link to obviously the book Content Transformation in the show notes for this episode as well. And I'll put a link to Content Design London as well for people to learn more about the brilliant work that the team does over there as well. If people wanted to connect with you personally, what are the best social media platforms for us to include in the show notes and maybe to give a shout out to them now?
I'm on LinkedIn, Henrik Van Haren, and I'm on Twitter as Pop-Up Story.
Nice. What we might do as well, we're chatting there about maybe Henrik doing a takeover of our newsletter to talk a little bit more around content transformation, because I know it's a topic dear to many of our listeners' hearts. So stay tuned and sign up to the newsletter if you want to hear more about this. Thanks so much for your time, Henrik.
Thank you very much for having me.
There you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you enjoyed it and want to listen to more, why not visit thisishcd.com, where you can learn more about what we're up to and also explore our courses whilst you're there. Thanks again for listening.